in the movies, Sam. This is real life. Okay, forget the blaze of glory part. Concentrate on the epic portion of the plan. I'm listening. Chapter 74. A sudden jar alerted them that they'd arrived in Dover. Sam slipped his flashlight from his backpack and turned it on. First thing we're going to need to do is figure out if this car runs. Chad said it did. Let's hope nothing's happened to it since then. I doubt they've had the time or inclination to worry about batteries or draining fuel. Well, let's find the battery and make sure it's charged. I think you need to bang on the fuel tank to be sure it's not empty, Remy said. You know, just planning for the blaze of glory. Sam and Remy found the battery and were rewarded when Remy tried the horn. The battery had juice. Sam determined there was enough fuel for their escape. We'll have to time it perfectly. Move the block and get the straps off, then start it the moment they open up the container. I'm hoping the shock value will work in our favor. We can drive right on out. The pallets, Sam. You forgot the pallets. This baby can blast right through them. What if they move the container inside a warehouse first? Nowhere to drive at that point. We go to Plan B, Remy. The Plan B where we have an actual backup plan? Or Plan B where we're making it up as we go along? I'm shocked that you have so little confidence in me. Not you, Fargo. Bonnie and Clyde. This whole blaze of glory thing, forget that. Once they get the ghost off the ferry, we've got to be ready. We might not have a lot of time to make our move. It took about an hour for the truck and cargo to clear customs. What Sam didn't expect was that the truck and container would be moved onto a train. 15 minutes later, they were rolling down the tracks. Do we have a signal yet? Remy asked. Selma's bound to be worried. Sam took out his phone to check. With the container now in the open, Sam found one and called, putting it on speaker. Mr. Fargo, is that you? Your voice is cutting out. Where are you? In a container on a train, with the ghost, just leaving Dover. Container? Dover? To where? We were hoping you'd know, Sam said. Long story short, we got locked in the shipping container with the ghost, which is supposed to be on its way to Oran via ferry from Calais. Hold on. The silence lasted for several seconds until she came back on the line. Oran has industrial property in Manchester, but Laszlo thinks he might have something outside of London. We'll see if we can't narrow it down. Let's hope it's London, Remy said. We haven't eaten since breakfast. I don't think I can do 4 more hours locked in here. Hate to say it, Remy. It's possible we'll be shuttled into some warehouse where we'll be stored until Oren's crew comes. Cheery thought, Fargo, she replied. We still need to figure out how we're getting out of here when we do land somewhere. Blaze of glory, Remy. Blaze of glory. Pardon? Selma said. We're planning on driving the ghost out of the container and making our getaway, Sam said. A bit hasty, aren't you, Sam? Laszlo chimed in. I'm afraid the ghost isn't as easy to start as the Aaron's fox. 11 years of technology between the two. While Laszlo was researching the events of Aunt Six, he learned a little about the workings of automobiles back then, Selma added. Yes, you see, there are 13 steps to starting the ghost. The automobile was not designed for your fast getaway. I think this will take more than a little planning on your part, Laszlo continued. I'll have Selma send you a list that will take you through the steps so that you can get the car running. And you'd better be sure that there's a battery. It's charged and there's fuel in the tank, Selma added. Done, done, and done, Remy answered. We'd better get going. Sounds like we have a lot to organize before we're on firm ground. Sam ended the call, the dim light from the screen fading to black. Shortly, Sam's phone signaled Selma's text had arrived. Reading through the complicated procedure, Remy said, Right now, I wish the Aunt Six ghost came with a phone charger. Sam and Remy divided up the 13 steps, trying to streamline their jobs to make the process move as quickly as possible. The next thing they knew, the train came to a stop. Outside, they heard shouting, metal clanking, and the rumbling of the container as the truck drove off the train bed and onto the road. Sam and Remy gripped the door and seat back, grateful that the ghost offered a measure of safety. 20 minutes later, the truck stopped, started backing up. When it came to a rest, something heavy hit the top of the container, metal grinding against metal. The box shifted and was suddenly lifted. "We'll be fine," Sam said with bravado. "You seem awful sure of yourself. We're sitting in a car worth $32 million. You really think they're going to let anything happen to it?" The sensation was similar to being in an elevator, quickly rising, then lowering to the ground. "Careful!" came a shout, and their descent slowed, the landing so gentle that they barely noticed. "Leave it there, boys!"
"I believe," Sam whispered, "we've arrived."
Chapter 75. Silence surrounded them once more.
"How's this blaze of glory going to work?" Remy whispered. "The moment they open this container and move the pallets, they're going to pull the canvas off and see us."
Sam was already rethinking the plan. The only reason they hadn't been discovered the first time was that the ghost had already been strapped down for shipping, and they didn't need to check it carefully.
"We need somewhere to hide."
"There's nothing in here. Only the car and the false front.
That, Remy, is brilliant."
"I love being brilliant.
But how is that going to help?"
"They're hollow," he said, shining his flashlight on the boxes.
"Come on."
He gave the light to Remy, shoved his knife in at the top right corner of a box about waist height, carefully slicing down at the edge, around the bottom, up to the top left corner, turning that side of the box into one large flap, revealing the empty space within. "You're hiding in here."
"That box isn't big enough."
"Not yet, but it will be," he said, leaning into the now open carton and slicing open the bottom of it as well as the top of the box beneath it.
"In you go."
He pushed the large flap aside and helped Remy climb in. She squatted down, pulling the flap closed. He'd kept his cuts to the very corners and edges. Satisfied that as long as anyone didn't look too close, they wouldn't see, he repeated the process with the second pallet. Grabbing his backpack, he dropped it inside, climbed in, carefully pulling his flap closed. And it was none too soon, judging by the voices he heard coming from outside. Sam drew his gun when he heard the container being opened. This was the moment. If the cut boxes were noticed, he and Remy wouldn't survive once they were discovered.
"Get that forklift over here," someone shouted.
An engine revved. Sam shifted suddenly as the prongs were inserted under the pallet at the base of the false front. As the pallet was pulled from the container, he could just make out the empty warehouse through the cut he'd made in the corner of the box. The vibration from the forklift as it drove the stack of boxes across the floor caused his carton flap to open. He grabbed it, pulling it closed, hoping his fingers weren't visible as he held it shut. A moment later, his limited view suddenly darkened, and he realized the entire unit had been shoved up against the wall, blocking his and Remy's flaps from opening.
"How's the car?"
"Looks fine."
"Let's get that other pallet out of there. We'd better have that car out of there before Mr. Oren arrives."
Sam and Remy could do nothing but sit and wait as the two men freed the ghost from the container. A cell phone rang.
"Mr. Oren, it's here.
But it's already out of the container."
"Right."
Sharp footsteps echoed across the warehouse. Then,
"Let's close up the warehouse. Oren wants it to stay put until he gets here."
"When?"
"Shouldn't be too long. He took the train under the channel. Now hurry it up. I'd like a bite before we leave."
Sam heard heavy footsteps receding as the men walked out. The door slammed shut. Silence. He pushed on the cardboard flap, but it hit the wall. It was too close. Holstering his gun, he pulled out his knife and sliced a new opening through the sides of the boxes until he was free. Sam saw that Remy couldn't get out of her hiding place either, and quickly sliced an opening for her. The warehouse was empty, except for the pallets, the shipping container, and the gray ghost.
The car was a thing of beauty, unmatched by any vehicle save the more famous Silver Ghost. The two side-by-side overhead doors were operated by wall switches. To the right was the entrance door, with a small window, and beside it, an alarm panel on the wall, blinking red. He turned on the phone and saw Selma had texted the address of Oren's London area warehouse. He called the police, giving them the address that Selma had provided.
That's a large complex, sir. Can you narrow it down?
The GPS on his Italian cell phone wasn't registering. Wondering where exactly they were, he looked out, saw a row of similar warehouses, the nearest one with a forklift driving out the open bay door with a pallet of goods. The best I can do is, we're at the end of a road next to a blue warehouse.
Please stay in a safe location until help arrives, sir.
They're on their way, Sam told Remy. Remy looked at the alarm panel. What if we set it off? That should tell them where.
If the crooks are setting that alarm, the only ones getting notified are the crooks. I doubt they'd have a system that connects to the police.
I think it's time to see if the ghost really does run. Sam looked out the window again, then looked to Remy. Ready? Blaze of glory. Sam and Remy smoothly went through each step. Sam had just flooded the carburetor and was putting down the hood.
Sam, a car just drove up.
I'm not sure, but I think it's parking between the buildings.
We're good to go. I can finish starting the ghost. Open the overhead door.
The alarm.
No choice, Sam said. We've got to go.
Sam hopped into the driver's seat and Remy hit the button. The overhead door started to roll up. The alarm panel on the wall started beeping as she ran back to the car, jumping from the left running board into the passenger seat. The engine started easily. He pulled the ignition lever on the left side of the steering wheel down to its stop when the engine began to fire. He eased the throttle to build up the revolutions per minute as the engine smoothed out.
Chad is a man of his word, a consummate musician. Just listen to her purr.
Sam, I'm not sure we have time for accolades right now.
Remy, you're ruining a magic moment.
A bullet will ruin your magic moment.
Ah, Bonnie and Clyde.
Right. Blaze of glory.
Sam put the car in first gear and eased off the clutch. The car's response was immediate, and Sam drove toward the door. The side door suddenly opened. The two men walking in stopped short when they saw Sam at the wheel.
Hey!
One shouted. The ghost surged forward. One of the men ran after them, drawing his gun.
Put that away, you idiot! You might hit the ghost! You're getting away!
Get the car!
The other shouted, running after them. The gray ghost increased speed. Sam popped the clutch into second and cruised into the street, gaining speed, putting distance between them and the warehouse. A silver sedan pulled up. The men jumped in, the sedan's tires burning rubber as they sped after the ghost. Sam pressed the rolls as fast as he dared, hitting the horn as a forklift came whipping down a truck ramp. It stopped, the driver stunned to see the antique car zipping past.
They're on our tail, Remy said.
Sam glanced back. I get the feeling they're under orders to preserve the car.
No wonder.
That's definitely Oren with them. Sam shifted into third and stepped on the gas.
Slight problem.
The ghost didn't respond. It gave one last cough, then died. Chapter 76. Remy gripped her pistol, looking around for help, as Sam tried to restart the ghost as it rolled to a stop in front of one of the many warehouses on the street. It was closed. She aimed at Oren's car, pulling up behind them. Let's hope he was serious about not shooting at the ghost.
That won't keep them from dragging us out of it, Sam said.
They're going to have to get close enough to do it, she replied, finger on the trigger. Oren's car suddenly slowed, tires screeching as the vehicle came to a stop, shifted into reverse, then started forward again, making a sudden left turn, engine roaring as it raced off.
Police, Sam said, as the smell of burnt rubber drifted toward them.
He put his hand on her gun, pulling it down, out of sight. Remy turned, saw a patrol car speeding toward them.
Just when things were starting to get fun, she said,
holstering her gun and pulling her jacket closed.
The first thing they did was call Selma with the news that they'd recovered the gray ghost. As soon as they finished giving their statements to the investigators at the police station, they called again with an update. "Any word from Oliver and Chad?" Sam asked.
"About an hour ago, Mr. Fargo," Selma replied.
"Oliver was ecstatic to hear the news. They should reach Manchester this evening." "Good to hear. How's the financial end of things looking?"
"We're making progress. The FBI is actually taking the case on, with their cybersecurity division helping to coordinate with the UK agencies."
"I meant short term," Sam clarified, as he and Remy walked outside the station. "As in, we'll be lucky to have train fare to Peyton Manor."
"There should be a car waiting for you, a black Mercedes."
He looked around the lot and saw the vehicle, which had been idling, was now headed toward them.
"Love the efficiency. But how do we know he's not one of Oren's men?" "Unless Oren managed to get to your personal banker, you should be in the clear. His nephew works in their London office. I think you met him at one of your fundraisers last year."
The Mercedes stopped a few feet away, and a short man, early 40s, got out of the front seat, looking at them over the roof of the car.
"Mr. and Mrs. Fargo, good to see you again."
Sam recognized Jeffrey Russell. "Efficient as ever, Selma. We'll be in touch once we hear from Oliver and Chad." Jeffrey smiled as he opened the car door for them.
"I hope you'll forgive my delay in getting here, but Miss Wondrash wanted to make sure that your crew was taken care of and the jet released. It's still a tangled mess. A few last-minute details with the Italian government, but nothing to worry about. The only issue is, we'll need to sit down, look over some legal documents, sign them, and..."
Sam's cell phone buzzed. "Excuse me," he said. "Oliver, you heard the news?"
"How soon can you get here?"
"Why? What's wrong?"
"The private detective called. Something about Dex and the ghost."
"The ghost? It's safe. In police lockup."
"Can you just get here? I don't know how much time we have. I'm very worried. Trevor's there and..."
"Say no more. We're on our way." He disconnected, looking at Remy. "We need to go."
"What's wrong?"
"That issue with Allegra and her ex. It's coming to a head." He turned to Jeffrey.
"I don't suppose you could give us a lift to the train station."
"But the papers? They're at the office.
Surely you can spare an hour to..."
"The papers have to wait." The man looked horrified.
"You realize you'll be losing tens of thousands of dollars? The interest alone is frightening."
"Can't be helped," Sam said, patting his pockets.
"Any chance you can loan us train fare?"
Sam and Remy settled into their seats as the train pulled away from the station.
"I should have asked him for snack money," Sam said.
"He bought us first-class tickets. It comes with a meal."
"How long has it been since we've eaten? I doubt it's going to be enough."
His phone rang. Chad was on the other end.
"Oliver wanted to make sure you're on your way," Chad said.
"Barring some unforeseen problem, we should be there in about 2 hours. Sam moved closer to Remy, putting the phone between them so that she could hear.
"Do you know what's wrong?"
"Just that he's beside himself after talking on the phone to the private detective," Chad said,
lowering his voice as though Oliver was nearby.
"Who's confirmed the ex-husband is at the house. Poor chap. Worried about his sister and nephew, of course. We're there now."
"At Allegra's?"
"At the solicitor's, waiting for Bill Snyder to come in and tell him exactly what's going on. I thought I'd check in and let you know where we are and that I'll be around to pick you up when you arrive. I don't think he's in any condition to drive."
"We'll see you then," Sam said.
"Should we call the police?" Remy asked after he'd disconnected.
"Bill Snyder knows what he's doing. If he thinks the police should be called, I doubt he'll hesitate. Let's wait to see what's going on."
"I hope we're not too late."
Chapter 77 By the time Arthur Oren returned to his Manchester estate that evening, his temper had cooled significantly. It flared again when Colton walked into his office.
"I take it you weren't successful in recovering the ghost," Colton asked.
"Are you trying to be funny?" Colton took a seat, crossing his long legs as he looked around the room. "Where's the child?" "With his mother." The man pulled out his cigarettes, tapping one from the pack. "What happened?" he asked, between puffs as he lit it. "The Fargos happened. Somehow they got into the warehouse. By the time I arrived, they were driving off in a ghost." "And they're still alive?" "The police arrived, or they wouldn't be." Colton blew a stream of smoke to one side, his dark gaze holding Orin's. "How'd they even know where it was?" "I have no idea. But somehow they've managed to be a step ahead of me the entire time." "Is it possible someone's been feeding them information?" "I don't know how." But the idea bore merit. They'd managed to infiltrate Rossi's villa and his office. Unless, of course, Rossi lied about having mentioned the location of the warehouse. What would that have to do with anything? Orin handed him the phone he'd found in Rossi's office. "Can you have one of your men break into this thing? It's a prepaid phone. He won't get anything off this." He tossed the phone into the trash basket next to Orin's desk. "Where's the ghost?" "I have no idea." "Would the police hold on to it?" "I expect they'll process it for prints and such." Orin wasn't worried. His wouldn't be found. He never had the chance to touch it. "The bigger question is," Colton said, "will they search it and find whatever it is you're looking for? I don't suppose you have any idea what it is yet, do you? If I knew that, we wouldn't be having this conversation." "What makes you think they haven't found it?" "We would have heard something." "You're sure?" Colton asked. "Isn't there something in this journal you've been trying to get from Peyton Manor?" Colton's comments stirred the anger that had been festering in Orin's gut ever since the gray ghost had been stolen from his warehouse. He'd been so close to having both the journal and the ghost in his possession, only to have both taken from him in a matter of days. "Peyton's sister. Allegra?" "Yes." "How is it she suddenly turned against us?" "I'm not sure she was ever with us. And from what I understand, the solicitor the Fargos hired is now in possession of that book. His investigator confiscated it from her." "How do we get it back?" "Carefully. Having the journal is one thing. Interfering with a murder investigation, quite another." "That's the best you can do," Orin said. Colton's icy smile made him glad they were on the same side. The man wouldn't hesitate to plunge a dagger in the heart of his own mother if she stood in his way. Orin rose from his chair, walking to the window, looking out into the garden where a groundskeeper was clipping the hedge. "Considering that your men committed that murder, being worried about obstruction of justice seems the least of your problems." "Our problems," Colton said, whispering in his ear. How had Colton gotten so close without him noticing? Orin took a breath, keeping his focus out the window, acting as though Colton's sudden proximity hadn't disturbed him in the least. "Meaning what?" "Meaning that they're conducting a murder investigation, and any attention directed toward us is dangerous. I've heard that Scotland Yard's involved." "Why would the dead security guard from the London Motor Show? They did an autopsy and know the cause of death wasn't due to the fire as they'd originally thought." "What does that have to do with who investigates?" "Since they don't know where he died, they've decided that a mutual investigation is in order. Scotland Yard has more resources." It took a few seconds for Orin to process that information.
"What do you think they'll find?"
"If we're careful, nothing." Colton peered out the window, as though searching for whatever it was Orin had found so interesting. Eventually he turned back, but instead of taking his seat, he walked to the door. "Where do you think you're going?" Orin asked.
"You said you wanted the journal.
Albert Peyton's solicitor had it.
Seems to me that if his client is being tried for murder, the Crown would want that as evidence. I intend to make that happen. And what good will that do?
Colton stopped by the door.
Two things. One, give us a chance to see it. Two, and more importantly, expose the Fargos.
How?
You know as well as I that they have that journal.
And you think they're simply going to turn it over to you?
Colton's smile chilled him to the bone. Allegra's been the weak link in this. Time to pay her a visit. We pressure her. The rest falls into place.
Chapter 78. Remy was glad to see Chad waiting for them at the train station. How was Oliver doing? She asked him.
A nervous wreck, pacing the floor when I left. He wasn't happy about waiting at the detective's office alone. Snyder said he'd come straight away the moment his replacement arrives. In light of Dex's call, he's hesitant to leave Allegra's house without someone watching it. Bill Snyder's office, on the second floor of a brick building near the city center, was across the hall from the solicitor's. When Oliver saw Sam and Remy walk in, he looked as if a weight had lifted from his shoulders.
"Thank heavens," he said. Remy drew him to one of the chairs, taking a seat next to him. "You're here now."
"What happened?" Sam asked him as Bill walked in.
"Dex left a voicemail at Peyton Manor. Somehow he heard we'd recovered the ghost and wants to trade the car for the goods," Bill said.
"Right. The goods on who framed my uncle for murder. And now I need to figure out what to do."
"Well, you'd better make the call," Sam said.
Bill nodded.
"If it's something we can use, the sooner we discover what it is, the better. We can set up in the conference room and put it on the speakerphone."
He led them across the hall where they all took seats around the large table.
"What should I say?"
Oliver asked, as Bill placed the phone in front of him.
"First thing is find out if Allegra and Trevor are okay. We need to hear their voices, not just take his word for it."
"Remember," Sam added, "be firm. Keep the pressure on him. Don't let Dex order you around."
"I won't," he said, his expression wary as he made the call.
After it rang several times, a man picked up, saying, "Who's this?"
"Is Allegra there? This is her brother."
"Where are you calling from?"
Bill slipped his boss's business card in front of him, tapping on it.
"The solicitor's office," Oliver said, "to find out the legalities of signing the car over since it's part of the estate. May I talk to Allegra?"
"She's busy. You can talk to me."
Sam mouthed, "Pressure."
Oliver nodded. "Busy or not, put her on or our conversation is over."
"Allegra," Dex called, "get over here and tell your brother you're fine."
A few seconds of silence, then Allegra saying, "I'm fine."
"And Trevor?" Oliver asked.
"Trevor!"
Dex shouted.
"What?"
This voice came from farther away.
"It's your uncle," they heard Allegra say. "Talk to him."
"What for?"
"Satisfied?" Dex said.
"Quite," Oliver replied.
"What's this information you're willing to trade for?"
"What you need to get Albert out of jail."
When Bill made a rolling motion with his hand, Oliver nodded.
"I need something a little more concrete or we don't have a deal.
Your uncle didn't kill the security guard found in the warehouse. A man named Colton did. It was ordered by Arthur Oren to frame him."
"What about the video evidence?" Oliver asked, reading Remy's note.
"That was Bruno, dressed up like the old man."
"Then where was my uncle at the time?"
"You'll get that information and all the other evidence when I get the gray ghost. Bring the ghost. Paperwork signed tonight. You get what you want. Evidence. And I get what I want. The car. And I mean the real car. Not some trumped-up fake like you tried to pass off on Frank and Bruno."
"I'm waiting to meet with the solicitor," Oliver said. "There are legal papers from the estate that limit what I can sign over.
I'll ring you as soon as I get the papers drawn up.
Tell you what, Dex said. I'll ring you. Is this a good number?
Bill nodded.
Yes. Tell them to hurry with the paperwork before I change my mind.
The line went dead. When can we get the car? Oliver asked.
We can't, Sam said. The ghost is in police lockup near London. It's evidence in a murder case.
Oliver's face paled.
I just promised it to him. If he finds out, it's not...
Bill stood, walked over to the water cooler and filled a cup, bringing it over to Oliver.
It's not like we can just walk in and they'll release the car. It could be tied up for weeks, months even.
Chad sat up, clapping his hand on the table.
What about the faux ghost? Do what we did with my mum.
Sam shook his head. Doubtful we could pull that off a second time. You heard what he said.
Quite right, Oliver said.
Angering Dex isn't a good idea. He's prone to violence. I don't know what he'll do if he discovers we can't get him the ghost.
Actually, Remy said, if we can get a document that sounds legal, we won't need the ghost at all.
She looked at Sam and smiled.
Remember that time in Belize?
Chapter 79.
What happened in Belize? Bill asked Sam, after requesting the transfer of ownership document from his secretary.
Remy went in the front door, distracted our target, while I went in the back and helped our friends escape. Of course, that was an oversimplified version that ignored some of the more dangerous aspects of the event, something they didn't need to go into right now. Not that an investigator like Bill needed further explanation. He knew the inherent dangers and looked aghast as Sam's words sank in.
You're actually considering sending your wife into that house. You realize Dex is armed.
It worked before. And, to be fair, Remy's armed too. Bill turned to Oliver, perhaps hoping to find an ally.
You can't be okay with this.
I'd rather no one had to go in, Oliver said. But after everything we've been through the last couple of weeks, I pity the poor man who gets in Remy's way.
When Bill looked at Chad, he immediately raised his hands.
Sorry, mate. I don't think my vote counts.
Mine either, Bill said. I'll get the files.
He returned several minutes later with photographs of Allegra's house and the neighborhood, as well as printed copies of a satellite map. As they were looking them over, his secretary returned, handed him a folder.
The amendment, in triplicate as requested.
That was fast.
We had a copy of the Viscount's will due to the investigation. I scanned it, changed the names, then added a signature page. Easy peasy.
Thank you, Chelsea, he said. I'll see you tomorrow.
He slid the file across the table toward Remy.
Your prop.
Remy opened the folder, looking over the papers while Sam studied a photo of Allegra's neighborhood. Victorian, brick-faced, terraced houses lined both sides of the street, each three-story unit sharing a common wall with the next, while the high-peaked slate roof on each was decorated with wrought iron crests running the length.
Which unit is hers? He asked Bill.
Second house from the far end.
No access from the backyard?
No, Bill said, unless you up a fence from a neighboring unit, which sort of makes your Belize plan a moot point.
You're assuming we were talking about the back door. I see a lot of windows here.
What's in this room? Sam asked Oliver, pointing to the uppermost window located beneath the front-facing gable.
Mostly trunks and boxes. As far as I know, the room facing the back is still empty.
Allegra had thought about turning it into a guest bedroom, but never got around to it. The stairs are frightfully narrow. Her bedroom and Trevor's are on the first level with the loo.
What's on the ground level?
Front parlor, kitchen,
a dining area, and a windowless room at the back of the stairs she uses for an office.
Not much bigger than a closet, I'm afraid.
Sam examined that upper-level window, an idea forming.
Can you map out the floor plan of the attic?
Well, of course.
Oliver drew a rectangle, divided it into two rooms, one facing the front, an identical room facing the back. the doors to both opening to what he described as a dark, narrow stairwell in the middle.
"This should do nicely," Sam said. "If we can stall Dex until tomorrow night, that might be our best option."
"The attic," Oliver said. "How?"
"Rooftop entry, after dark," he said as the phone rang. Bill glanced at the caller ID. "It's Dex's mobile."
"Should I answer it?" Oliver asked.
"Typically," Bill said, "Chelsea would answer."
"I can be Chelsea," Remy said.
"He might suspect you if you sound American."
"I'll make sure to sound like a proper Brit," she said in her best upper crust accent.
"David Cook's office?"
"Well done. Let's give it a try, shall we?"
Bill hit the speaker button. There was a few second delay after Remy answered, and just when they wondered if Dex was going to answer at all, he said,
"Oliver Payton told me you had some paperwork for me."
"Who's calling, please?"
"Dex Northcott."
"One moment, Mr. Northcott. Let me see if it's finished."
She put the call on hold and looked to Bill for further direction.
"Tell him the copies are ready for delivery tomorrow, mid-morning as promised."
Remy hit the speaker button and repeated the information. A long stretch of silence followed. Finally, Dex said,
"Oliver told me he'd have the papers tonight."
Sam drew his finger across his neck, telling her to cut that line of thinking. She nodded, saying, "I'm terribly sorry, but Mr. Cook's left the office for the evening and he has to sign off on them."
"Call him," he ordered. "I'll hold."
"One moment, please."
Remy pressed the button. Oliver stared at the blinking light, his expression troubled.
"I don't like that he's rushing this."
"I can tell him no," Remy said. Oliver shook his head. "The man has the temperament of a firecracker with a short fuse. He's likely to take it out on Allegra or Trevor." Sam looked at the photographs, then at Bill. "Any objections to moving it up to tonight?"
"Not sure I'd be able to bring in anyone to help on such short notice."
"There's five of us," Remy said.
Bill turned to Oliver and Chad, the dubious expression on his face.
"Nor do we have the proper equipment. Radios and earpieces. Gear to get from the roof to the window."
"If we can come up with enough cell phones and a long enough rope," Sam said, "we can hit from the top and the bottom, assuming you're all in." When each of them nodded, he looked at his wife. "Reel him in, Remy." She pressed the blinking light.
"Mr. Northcott, it just occurred to me that my tram stop isn't too far away from your address. Since I'm working late tonight, I can bring the papers by on my way home."
"How long? I have to leave in an hour."
Sam brought his hands together, pulled them apart, indicating she needed to stretch the time. They needed to wait for dark. Remy gave him a thumbs up. "Unfortunately, I'll need to fax a copy to Mr. Cook to have him sign off on it. He's in a dinner meeting with a client and can't be disturbed. But if you're willing to delay a few hours, I should be able to reach him after. Say, around 10 or 10:30.
I'm the paranoid type, so don't be surprised if I search you for weapons when you come in."
She disconnected, and Sam outlined the plan. At 10:30, they drove to Allegra's to drop off Remy for the short walk to her house. She must have sensed Sam's anticipation as she slipped out.
"Don't worry, Fargo. I've got this."
Chapter 80. The knock at the door startled Allegra, even though she'd heard Dex talking on the phone and knew someone from the solicitor's office was dropping by. She'd been pinning her hopes on that email Trevor had sent to the private detective, but he'd never received a response. Realizing that they were truly on their own, she'd urged Trevor to continue typing the journal, but at a slower pace. He was in there now. She spent her time in the kitchen, pretending to be busy. Allegra stepped out, saw Dex walking to the front window, resting his hand on the butt of his gun as he parted the curtain to look out. Satisfied, he moved to the door and opened it a few inches.
"Mr. Northcott," came a woman's voice.
"Chelsea Roberts, from the solicitors."
Dex opened the door wider.
"You have the papers?"
"In my satchel.
Might I come in?"
He stepped aside, let her in, and, as usual, threw the deadbolt on the door.
"My card," she said, handing it to him. I've jotted down Mr. Cook's mobile, should you need it later. Is Allegra here? She asked, looking around expectantly. I'll need her signature as well. Allegra, Dex called. She stepped out, staring at the slender brown-haired woman standing in the dim light of the front room. Just tidying up? Who's this? The woman moved into the light, her smile somewhat familiar as she held a card toward Allegra. Chelsea Roberts, from your uncle's solicitor. Allegra took the card, doing a double take when she saw the handwritten message scrawled across the back of the card. Trevor to Attic, then follow. She stood there frozen, realizing at once who the woman was. Something wrong? Dex asked. Before she had a chance to respond, Remy stepped in, looked at the card, plucked it from her. How terribly embarrassing. My grocery list. Remy handed her a second card, saying, This one has Mr. Cook's mobile. Emergencies always arise in these odd cases. Shall I set up on the table? Allegra looked at the new card, saw a mobile number jotted on it, then back at Remy, amazed at how calm she appeared as she opened her briefcase on the table, carefully setting her mobile phone next to it. Yes, of course. Would you like a cuppa? Replied Allegra. Thank you, no. We really do need to get moving. Is your son about?
Trevor, Dex called. Get out here.
Trevor emerged from the office, his expression guarded. Remy offered a bland smile. So sorry. Didn't mean for you to call him just yet. Perhaps you might want him to wait upstairs while we discuss the particulars.
Why? Dex asked.
Remy pulled a folder from her briefcase. Matters pertaining to what happens if an heir dies. The sort of thing I'm not sure is entirely appropriate for children to hear. Dex appeared unmoved. Allegra, seeing her chance, realized she needed to be careful. Firm enough that her son listened, but not too concerned that Dex would take notice. Do be a dear, Trev, and run up to the attic. There's some headache powder by my pillow. When he hesitated, she looked at Dex, saying, He listens to you. The backhanded compliment worked. Dex gave him a curt nod. Off with you, then. Allegra kept her eyes on the papers Remy held, worry turning to relief when Trevor did as he was told. Remy smiled as she handed them each a packet of papers, saying, Because your son's not of age, it's important that you both understand the clause concerning the rules of inheritance regarding the viscountcy.
What's there to understand? Dex said. His uncle's giving him the car.
All this does is temporarily allow the Viscount's grandnephew to take early possession of what will eventually be his, should Oliver Peyton die without issue.
What do you mean, early possession? Won't the car be Trevor's once this is signed?
Technically, no, she said, removing two pens from her briefcase, holding one out to each of them. The vehicle is part of the Peyton estate and can only be passed down to an heir. Should anything happen to that heir, it goes to the next heir.
Me, his father.
Blood heir of the Viscountcy. In other words, if something happens to the remaining Peyton men, should the current Viscount die, the title and estates and everything attached to it, including the car and any money, will pass to the closest blood relative.
Who'd that be? Dex asked.
I expect the Peyton family would know better than I. She looked at Allegra. Madam? As far as I know, Allegra said, Arthur Orin is our closest blood relative.
Over my dead body, Dex replied, taking the pen. Where do I sign?
The last page, Remy said. He quickly turned to it and she added, Might I suggest you read the entire document first?
Isn't that what you're supposed to have done before you got here?
He signed it, then looked up at her, his expression one of annoyance.
There's a space here for Trevor's signature.
Remy gave him a neutral smile. We will need the boy's signature before it's legal. I assumed the two of you might want to discuss things prior.
Trevor,
he called as Remy's cell phone buzzed on the tabletop. She picked it up, looking at the screen. My husband.
Probably wondering when I'll be home, she said, putting it to her ear. Hello?
She smiled politely at them while she listened to the caller.
Oh, I thought they weren't coming until tomorrow. No worry. I'm almost done here. See you soon.
She ended the call, her expression apologetic.
I hate to be a pest, but I'm quite late.
And it seems we have unexpected visitors dropping by. My husband's worried he's going to have to entertain them himself.
If it's more convenient, I can drop by in the morning.
No, Dex said as he stalked toward the stairs. Trevor, get down here!
His back to them, Remy gave a slight tilt of her head. Allegra nodded. She knew Dex would never dare leave her alone down here with anyone he didn't know and trust.
I'll just pop up there and see what's keeping him so long, she said, resisting the urge to move any faster for fear of putting Dex on guard.
Mustering every bit of calm and strength she possessed, she looked right at Dex as she passed him. Probably in the loo, she said quietly, casually walking up the stairs. Trevor, she called, glancing back to see Dex watching her. When she reached the first floor landing, she made a show of looking in the bathroom, then down the stairwell, noticing Dex had moved up two steps.
Not there. I'll check in the attic.
He moved up another step. Worried, Allegra rounded the corner, picked up her pace, taking the stairs quickly. When she reached the attic, she pushed open the door, looked around the dark room, unable to see a thing.
Trevor!
Her panicked whisper cut through the silence as someone stepped from behind the door. Sam, she realized, her hand going to her heart as it raced out of control. She saw the pried open casement window, the rope harness hanging in it.
Is he
safe? Yes, he said. Let's get you out of here. He drew her to the window, helping her into the harness, though she tried to stop him. Arthur and Colton are coming. They'll recognize her. She'll be trapped. We know. They're parked out front. We think they're waiting for someone. She knows to go out the back door. We're sending the rope down for her. He tugged on the harness, and someone up above started lifting her.
You don't understand, she said, grasping his hand,
trying to make him listen before it was too late. It was her fault. Dex had suspected her when she'd tried to get Trevor to leave that first time when he'd gone off to the store.
She can't get out the back. Dex nailed the door shut.
Chapter 81
Sam stared at Allegra, seconds slipping away, hoping he'd heard wrong. So much for Plan B, he thought, as someone knocked at the front door. Sam leaned out the window, telling Chad, "Hold up!" He looked at Allegra, trapped in the harness, hanging in the window, probably scared to death about her son. Right now, he needed her help in evening out the odds. Any way you can get Dex up here?
Promise you won't kill him.
A promise he couldn't make. I'll try not to. Her gaze flicked to the doorway and then nodded. Sam helped her out of the harness. She looked back at him and stepped out into the stairwell.
Dex! She shouted. Trevor's gone!
Dex swore, his heavy footsteps echoing in the stairwell as he ran up. Once again, Sam helped Allegra onto the sill and into the harness, giving the rope a firm tug. She reached out, her eyes pleading.
He wasn't always this way.
The moment Chad started lifting her out, Sam hid behind the door, listening for Dex. By the time Dex reached the attic, the knocking at the front door growing more insistent, he'd slowed considerably, his breathing labored.
Allegra!
He saw her feet disappearing out the open window, and he rushed toward her, his gun drawn. Sam crossed the room, jamming the nose of his Smith & Wesson into Dex's ribs. Nice of you to join us, he said, grabbing Dex's shoulder, forcing him back and off balance. Drop the gun. Dex held tight.
You know who's at the door? They'll kill you.
Sam slammed him to the floor.
Make a sound and I'll use you as my shield. Let go of the gun, he said, this time jabbing the barrel of his .38 into the base of Dex's skull.
When Dex loosened his grip on the weapon, Sam grabbed it, dropping it into his pocket as they heard the sound of shattering glass downstairs, then someone trying to shoulder open the front door.
Move, or make any noise, you'll regret it. Understand?
Dex nodded. Sam moved toward the stairwell, hearing wood splintering as the door was kicked in, a man shouting, Dex, where are you? Sam looked over at him, putting his finger to his lips.
The attic,
Dex shouted, giving Sam a triumphant look at the sound of someone running up the stairs.
They know you're hi-
Sam pointed his gun at Dex. I was trying to be nice. Dex's mouth clamped shut, his eyes going wide. The sharp crack echoed off the walls. Dex screamed as he rolled onto his side, gripping his thigh. Now that he didn't have to worry about an attack from that direction, Sam turned back to the stairwell as Frank reached the landing. Sam fired. Frank ducked back.
Fargo's here! Kill him!
What Sam didn't hear was anyone mentioning Remy's name. He took that as a good sign, his eye on the landing below. Frank peered around the corner. Sam fired again, keeping him contained. Time to even the odds. Is Arthur with you? For a few seconds, the only thing he heard was Dex moaning in the dark behind him. Finally, a new voice, saying, What do you want, Fargo? Just thought you'd like to know who sold the ghost to Rossi. The following silence lasted for several seconds. Even Dex's whimpering stopped. Who? The man called. Might want to ask Frank. Or Dex, assuming he lives long enough. Another stretch of silence. Then the sound of heavy footsteps coming up the stairs.
He's lying, Frank said. I swear!
The muted gunshot echoed up the stairwell. Someone was equipped with a silencer. That meant only one thing. He'd gotten Trevor and Allegra out just in time. These men weren't here to negotiate with Dex. Or anyone else, for that matter. They'd come to kill. Sam backed into the room, seeing Dex, his eyes wide with fright. He leaned down, whispering, I'd play dead if I were you. As dark as it was, he couldn't be sure, but it looked like Dex's face paled. Sam grabbed the rope Chad dropped for him, slipped on the harness, holstered his gun, and climbed up onto the sill. Dex, he saw, decided to take his advice, slapping one bloody hand on his chest, closing his eyes, doing his best to feign a mortal wound. Sam tugged on the rope. Just in time, Chad pulled him up and out of the window. Sam braced his arms on the roof's edge as Chad held him by the harness. Hold up, he whispered, worried about the noise if he climbed up. Allegra and Trevor, arms around each other, were huddled near the chimney, their eyes locked on Sam. He craned his neck, trying to see below, just as Bruno stuck his head out the window.
Where's Fargo? Came a voice, deeper than Oren's.
Colton's, possibly.
Not here. Bruno never looked up. Must have hid in that other room after he shot Dex. Search the house. Make sure he's not here.
Sam heard their retreating footsteps. He signaled for Chad to lower him to the ground, catching sight of Dex on the attic floor as still as death. The man didn't deserve to live, as far as Sam was concerned, but he'd promised Allegra, and halfway understood why she'd asked to spare his life. Killing the boy's father while he was perched on the roof, waiting for this to be over, was bound to leave a deep scar. And there was little they could do, except trying not to make any noise until help arrived, or Sam cleared Allegra's house. But right now, his wife was down there. Where, he didn't know. And he was going to make sure she walked out unharmed if it was the last thing he did. He touched down, saw the shattered window glass glittering in the moonlight on the pavement in the tiny patch that was the backyard. Someone had smashed that window from the inside. And since it happened at the same time that Arthur and company had arrived at the door, he knew it was Remy. One thing was clear. She didn't go out through the window. There were too many glass shards remaining at the base of the sill for anyone to have climbed through. And there were no broken branches in the hedges growing against the fence. Remy was still inside the house. Gun out, he made his approach. Time to go in and get her. Chapter 82. The odds weren't in Sam's favor. 3-1. And that was assuming Dex continued to play dead and Frank really was dead, with no idea where Remy was. If she was hiding anywhere, it was in that windowless space at the back of the stairs that Allegra used for an office, the only place she could get to once she realized she wasn't making it out that window. He had 3 rounds left in his Smith & Wesson, but he also had Dex's semi-auto and drew it from his pocket. A Browning 1911 380 with an 8-capacity magazine. He checked, saw it was full, with a round in the chamber. Preferring his more familiar firearm, he was about to tuck the Browning into his waistband,
but changed his mind. There would be an inquest, and using Dex's gun to kill anyone would cut down on any questioning about why the permits they'd wrangled the last time they were here had expired. Both weapons were .38 calibers, a lot harder to match when you were digging bullets out of the floor. The less shots with his gun, the better, and he holstered it, gripping the Browning, flicking the safety off with his thumb. The backyard was relatively dark. The two floodlights mounted above the small covered porch were off. He was going to have to kick open the back door. He made a wide berth around the broken glass, ducking as he passed the window. Unexpectedly, the floodlights clicked on, blinding him. A shot rang out as Sam dove toward the porch, a lance-like pain in his right shoulder catching him by surprise as he hit the ground, diving beneath the porch for cover out of sight. Someone had gotten a lucky shot. Time to switch things around. Not sure where the shot came from, he pressed himself against the bricks near the door, waiting, listening, figuring someone had to be in the kitchen to have turned on those lights. This was going to complicate things. He heard an audible click above him, and the lights shut off. Motion detector. The grays on his shoulder pulsed with pain, and he reached up, feeling the blood seeping from the shallow wound. Had to be someone at one of the upper windows. Careful not to trigger the motion detector again, he peered out, just as Bruno's head emerged from the second floor window. Sam fired, driving him back, buying time. He kicked the door. It budged about an inch, the nails holding tight. He kicked it again. It flew open, hitting the wall. A burst of suppressed shots peppered the door, splinters flying. From the corner of his eye, Sam saw the muzzle blasts coming from the front room, just a few feet from where Remy had to be hiding. "Give it up, Fargo," Colton called out. "You're only making it worse." "For who?" He pressed up against the bricks between the open door and the window, moving the Browning to his left hand. Reaching inside the doorway with his other, he felt the wall, searching for the light switch. There were two. He switched off the motion lights, was about to withdraw, then froze. Fingers still on the switch, he moved back as far as he could without losing contact, pointing the Browning with his left hand toward the window. He pressed the switch. A brass light fixture over the dining table lit up, casting light into the front room. Sam sidestepped across the porch, looked in the window, saw two men. Oren near the foot of the stairs, a gun held down, and his hired help, Colton, aiming his gun at the back door. When Colton realized his mistake, it was too late. Sam fired, grazing his left side. Colton whirled around, ran for the stairs as Sam fired twice more, driving both men back up the stairs. He fired off a fourth round into the grass as he slipped into the kitchen to make them think he was at the window. Once inside, he saw Remy's open briefcase on the table. The kitchen was empty, no cupboards large enough for her to hide in. "You're surrounded," Sam called out, though in this case, who was surrounded was Chad on the rooftop, with Bill and Oliver listening in the van to direct the police, when they finally got there. "There's nowhere for you to go." Unless they wanted to get out the upstairs windows, they were momentarily trapped. His weapon aimed at the stairwell, he quickly looked around, saw what looked like a closet door at the back of the stairs, and crossed the room. "Remy?" he whispered. She opened the door, a sight for sore eyes. "Took you long enough." He grinned. "Where's your gun?" "Briefcase. Barely made it here in time." He glanced back toward the table. Getting to it meant risking exposure to the stairwell. Instead, he pulled his Smith & Wesson from his holster and handed it to her, as the faint sound of sirens drifted in from the open door. "Hear that, Oren?" he yelled. "You're going to lose. The police are on their way." It was Colton who responded, shouting from inside the stairwell. "If you want any witnesses alive to testify that Albert's innocent, you'll let me walk out of here. The case is ironclad. You need them." Before Sam had a chance to respond, they heard Oren's voice, tense. "Are you insane? You're just as guilty." "Only if they catch me. Drop the guns, both of you, or I'll blow your heads off." It was a moment before Sam realized Colton wasn't talking to him. Two handguns landed on the floor at the foot of the stairs. "We're coming down," Colton shouted. "If you want your witnesses, you won't shoot." Two hands popped out past the wall, fingers splayed. Bruno said, "Don't shoot." Sam and Remy, guns at the ready, watched as Bruno emerged, hands raised. "Stop," Sam said. "Kick the guns toward me and get down on